Hello and welcome to the RG10 podcast. Now, what if I told you that you had the chance to go to Antigua and Barbuda for a few days? What if I told you that you could spend some time in the Azores beforehand? And what if I told you that there's a catch? You've got to do the whole 3,000-mile journey in a rowing boat. Not so keen now, are you? Well, back in 2021, that was the challenge that Caroline Haig, Nikki Kelly and Rachel Smiley, who all met at Eton Excelsior Rowing Club, set their minds to. They gave themselves 2 years to get ready. This involved all of the training and raising £150,000 for the boat and equipment, their main sponsor being Val Wyatt Marina in Wargrave. The actual event started back in December last year, and before even reaching the start line, complications began. Training was heavily disrupted by bad weather, and their boat was broken into, with thieves taking solar panels and causing £10,000 worth of damage. But on the 11th of February 2024, after 60 days, 13 hours and 32 minutes, Team Excelsior docked at Nelson's Dockyard, Antigua, and celebrations could begin. I've been talking to Rachel about the whole escapade and started by asking her what a typical day rowing the Atlantic is like.
I think the interesting thing for us was there was probably no such thing as a typical day. And I don't know how much that's unique to our crossing because we had such kind of challenging weather conditions. Your rowing shift on a good day is 3 hours on, 3 hours rest. But your rest periods are, you've got to feed yourself, you've got to wash. In my case, you've got to kind of check your navigation, do any other boat jobs that you've got to do, and then sleep. So actually, you only probably get maximum about 2 hours sleep whenever you're trying to sleep anyway. So that's a good day, total rowing of about 12 hours. On a bad day, so when the conditions are slow or when you can't kind of keep the boat moving on your own, for example, that would probably change to something like 17 hours of rowing a day. Right. So that would be more like 2 hours on, 1 hour off, if you were lucky, or an hour and a half on and half an hour off, which is pretty disgusting. So a typical day, was very changeable for us because it really depended on the weather conditions. But from the kind of morning shift, you'd be, you know, you start the day, you get up, you kind of get yourself dressed and out of your cabin, which is a challenge in itself, use the bucket, get on shift, and then you're rowing for 3 hours without a break, and then you'd come off. You would probably cook, so make your lunch or your breakfast depending on what time it was, which involves using the jet boil. Get some water on your food, eat your food, get that all washed up and away. And then the other kind of big thing that is a kind of time suck in your off shift is you need to get all the salt off yourself. So salt kind of really kind of corrodes your skin and it can cause a lot of issues, get salt sores. So at the end of every shift, you're having to wash the salt off yourself, whether that's with like fresh water or a baby wipe. Change your kit. If you're going to have a sleep, which in and of itself is a challenge because you've got to get all your kit out, lay it out in the cabin, get your sleeping bag, try and have some sleep, and then do it all in reverse to come back on shift again. And depending on what time of day it was, you know, get your sun cream on, get your head torch on, whatever other kit you might need for a shift. But we had hugely varied conditions. So we had, I think we only really had extremes. So we either had flat calm, slogging it out for every stroke, and you would look across, you know, either side of you and the Atlantic would be like a pond. Or we had big, big conditions and strong winds where you're kind of hanging on for dear life. And we didn't have a huge amount in between, to be honest.
Which is worse?
The slog is definitely worse because it's slow. Yeah. The hanging on for dear life is really tiring because you've always got to have your wits about you and you're constantly being kind of hyper-vigilant and hyper-focused. But you're looking at it and thinking, well, I'm getting 3 knots and I know that that's X number of miles a day. You know, a three knot average is about 70 miles a day, which is really nice. And you know that you're making good progress. When you're really, really slogging it out for a knot, as much as you can get little jobs done and you can kind of, you know, have some positives in that sense. And you get to do things like clean the bottom of the boat, which is always really fun. It's
Genuinely really fun, or are you being a bit
no,
sarcastic?
genuinely, it was one of my favorite things to do because you get to one, you get to get in the water and actually fully stretch your limbs out, which you don't get to do at any other point on that boat. But two, it's just it's. I think for me, I was more aware when cleaning the bottom of the boat than at any other point that I was having an experience that very few people in the world have ever had. Because you're in the mid-Atlantic, you're, 1,000 miles from land, and you're swimming, and that's an insane experience. And you look down, there's nothing beneath you. So that experience was incredible. So yeah, cleaning the boat, I really enjoyed. But yeah, the slow days, less so.
Were there any moments where the boat, the waves were so big that the boat capsized, or are there any other incidents along like that where you felt, right, we're in a bit of danger here?
Yeah, we had our first capsize within like the first 48 hours. I think we
Okay.
capsized in the first 48 hours, so it was a pretty like rude welcome to ocean rowing. We were all in the cabins, which I guess depending on how you look at it, is quite fortunate because it for me, I think that was less scary than if I'd been on deck. I think we all dealt with that differently. I think some of us found that more kind of scary than others. For me, actually, in a sort of perverse way, it kind of built confidence because then I was like, well, the boat self-righted, she did what she was supposed to do, and we know we can trust the boat. But obviously it is scary having kind of really big waves coming up over your head and things like that. During that first capsize, we had quite a lot of water come into the cabins, and that's normal, it comes through the vents. But obviously when that happens for the first time, you're like, what is happening? and that is quite, that is quite scary. And it was dark as well, so it's quite frightening in the dark to be trying to work out, is this normal kind of ingress of water or is there a hole? And obviously the boat was completely fine, so that was fine. We did get sideswiped by waves quite a lot during the crossing, so you can be, chugging along quite nicely, surfing down the tops of waves, which is really, really fun. And then suddenly one will just come from a different direction. You'll get smacked is the only way to describe it. And the water just rushes over the deck. So the boat's not going to capsize, but you feel like you're kind of, with the wave getting chucked across the deck, which is not great. So yeah, real kind of a mix of things like that. We had a lot of what are called knockdowns, which are where the boat will kind of come up on a wave and get lifted up and then kind of smack back down when the wave moves. And the boat's very secure. They're amazingly designed by a company called Rannoch. But you do then get huge amounts of water again, like rushing over the deck. You become, I wouldn't say complacent, but you become sort of attuned to that remarkably quickly. And you look at it and you stop thinking, oh no, and you just think, oh, I'm going to get wet again. So you do sort of change your attitude to it, I think, as time goes on. But yeah, we had some pretty spicy conditions, shall we
And you
say?
had something, your oar was broke or something along those lines, I heard. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I was actually on the phone to the duty officer for the race at the time. We had been what's called spun, kind of by the conditions, what we would call spun by the conditions. So essentially, we had got knocked off the top of a wave, and rather than being the right way round, we were so rather than being kind of our bow pointing in the right direction, our bow was pointing the opposite way around. We'd been kind of spun through 180 degrees. And when that happens, you almost become kind of pinned between two waves. So you have to work really hard physically to turn the boat back round because the waves are trying to push you a particular way. So I was on the phone to the duty officer getting some advice, kind of from them about how best we could do that in the big seas that we had. And I heard Nikki say, I've broken an oar. And then I could see through the cabin door that Caroline had broken an oar. And I thought, well, no, Caroline's broken an oar. And then we realized actually we'd broken two oars in one wave. Which was really unlucky. And that was only about day five of our crossing. So we were all really worried. We were all sort of looking at each other going, well, statistically, this isn't good because we don't have that many spares. But actually, luckily, we didn't break any other oars on the crossing. We didn't lose any oars. And we have kept them. So I think I'm certainly would quite like to have one of the broken ones on my wall, I think, rather than the intact ones. I don't know that it's the feel good move of the year, but I think one of the things we were quite lucky with was that actually with the three of us, nobody was having their worst day at the same time. So when one of us was at their absolute lowest, somebody else was usually in a position to kind of be able to, cheer them up and not go, God, you're right, it is really awful. And that actually, I don't think that's something, I think that's as much luck as anything else, but it worked really, really well for us because it meant that you always had that support. I think, of course, you're living in a confined space together for 60 days, you're going to snap at each other, you're going to get cross with each other. But we'd taken a lot of time in our training and in our planning to kind of set out, how do you like to be communicated with? Like, what are the things that are an issue for you? What are the things that stress you out? So I think our communication was pretty good. I think the thing that tested us the most was that first week for us when the conditions were really challenging and we were very much in survival mode. I think when you're in those conditions, that's the point where it's really hardest to be kind of kindest to yourself and kindest to each other. But no, I don't think we didn't have any, massive blowouts or anything like that. We ended the crossing still really good friends. So yeah, I don't think we had the kind of Ben Fogle and James Cranmer experience.
You mentioned there people having their worst days. Again, I don't want to drag up any awful memories for you, but Rachel, can you pinpoint what was your worst day of the whole trip? I'll ask you about your best day in a moment, but was there any day in particular that stands out for you?
So I was talking to my mum about this the other day, and actually I didn't have particularly like a bad kind of whole day in a sense. Although I can think of one that was like kind of technically the worst day, but for me, I don't have a good long enough attention span to be that stressed for any length of time. So I would be really miserable for about an hour, and then I'd get distracted and I wouldn't have the energy to kind of be miserable anymore. So I would kind of move on with that. But I think the worst day was we had a day where we were trying to get the boat turned around, in that kind of being pinned by the conditions that I described earlier. And we tried absolutely everything we could think of. We tried there, a thing called a drogue, which is where you're putting something off the stern of the boat. We tried, different things with hand steering or foot steering and, different combinations of rowing and, trying different things. And we essentially waste it felt like wasted an entire day because at the end of the day we still hadn't got turned around, and that was really hard. So we were on parachute anchor and we were at the end of the day being like, well, that's it, that's another 24 hours that we've just not made any progress now. So that was exhausting and just felt like we hadn't really got anywhere. So I think that for me was probably the worst day because it was just so frustrating.
So I've asked you about the worst day and the best day.
Other than seeing land for the first time in 6 days, which was amazing. I think we had a day, it was on Christmas Day evening. We had about 100 dolphins, a huge pod of dolphins, following us for about an hour, playing under the boat, kind of swimming in front of the boat. And that was amazing. And it was that kind of experience that, again, you think like so few people have ever been privileged enough to have this experience. And was just incredible. Like I can't even kind of describe it really, because they were just, it seemed like we had dolphins that just really wanted to play with us and play with the boat, which was just super cool. So yeah, I think that was one of the real high points for me. I really loved that.
What would you say? What's the thing that you missed most when you're on the journey? You're not allowed to say your family. We'll take that as given. But was there anything in particular that you missed most?
I miss walking. So for me, like my like, oh, I'm stressed, I'll go for a walk around the block. That's my like, release valve or whatever you want to call it. So not being able to just get up and go for a stroll, I really, really missed. I definitely miss like things like a comfy bed much more than I expected to really miss things like fresh food, which we all did. But actually, I found that I could kind of cope with the food and I would just sort of resign to it. Whereas every night I would kind of go to bed and be like, oh, I really miss my bed. So yeah, I think those were the two big ones for me, was like a proper bed and being able to go for a walk.
Finally, then, Rachel, I'm sure you're aware of the quote, Steve Redgrave, Sir Steve Redgrave, sorry, the 1996 Olympics, his penultimate Olympics, as it turned out. At the end of the race, he says something along the lines of, "If you ever see me in a boat again, then shoot me." Does that ring true for you?
No, not at all. Not at all. Nikki and I, in particular, were already on the crossing, being like, "So next time." So I think I would, I would be really interested in doing another crossing. I am being very honest with myself right now, which is saying, like, do I honestly have the energy for another campaign? Because actually the campaign was really exhausting. But certainly got, lots of interest in doing other projects. There are other things in the UK, for example, that I'd be really interested in doing. Caroline, Nikki, and I will all be rowing on the river again before too long as well. It's not rowable at the moment, the water's too high, but we are, keen to get back in our river boats as well. So no, I don't think any of us have, given up on boats after that.
That was Rachel Smiley from Team Excelsior. And the trio have been raising money for two fantastic charities. There's Thames Hospice, the local charity that provides expert care for people living with life-limiting illnesses in East Barks and South Buckinghamshire, and the Dash charity, Domestic Abuse Stops Here, providing specialist support to adults and children experiencing mental health issues, modern slavery, immigration, trafficking, homelessness, and complex needs associated with domestic abuse. Links to these charities and Team Excelsior's GoFundMe in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the RG10 podcast. If you have recently rowed the Atlantic, then please do get in touch. If you haven't, you can still impress your friends by subscribing to the RG10 podcast instead. Goodbye.